So this beautiful text, as we are going towards the end of it, it's taking us to very sublime heights of understanding. Especially the last few chapters are very powerful. But all of them, because the entire book takes you from the technique of meditation, the benefit of meditation, obstacles in meditation, to finally working on the mind, because the mind is the biggest problem. The mind is the one that runs out into wanting to get objects. The mind, when we start sitting, it races all over, and mind causes agitation. You see, the mind that is attached to objects binds us. The mind that is attached to the Lord is free. So in this chart, with the body, I perceive the objects. With the mind, I feel the emotions. With the intellect, I think the thoughts. So the mind, which is involved in objects of the world, is bound, is caught. And the mind that is attached to the Lord, Om within, is free. So how do we transform the mind? See, they say there is a lower mind, which is attached to the objects. And then there is a higher mind, which is attached to the Lord. And how do we transform this? So this is given very beautifully in this chapter. And then a few other thoughts that I was got over while I was reading this. So I kind of added to that. So how do we function in the world? So what happens is we have these vasanas, these tendencies, which are built up not only in this lifetime, but over multiple lifetimes. There are certain tendencies I am born with. Some child is an artist, some child is good in sports, some child is good in science. And then we, over the years as we live, the world conditions us. This is what you should do, this is what you should not do. So it strengthens our desires. And so these vasanas manifest as desires, and then desires become thoughts, and thoughts become actions. So from the vasanas, I have thoughts in my intellect, I have desires in the mind from the tendencies, and then it becomes actions. So that's how you can see. When you see a person, you say, oh, he's a good person. How do you know? From his actions, or maybe from his or her emotions. Maybe he's a very loving person. Or sometimes, rarely, you may come to know a person from their ideas. So that is how you judge a good person. So just as the vasanas influence my actions, the world also influences us. It also goes backwards. Say with my eyes, I see something, or I hear something, or I like something and I want to possess it. So my mind broods over it. My mind broods over it. Yes, yes, I must have it. And then the intellect gives value to it. Yes, yes, this is good. Without this, your life is incomplete. If you don't have this new dress, or if you don't have this jewelry, or don't have this car, or don't have this house, or don't have this country club membership, then somehow you are incomplete. And what that does strengthens our tendencies, because it creates new desires. I was born with certain desires, and then I create more desires in this world. So it works both ways. Then so the environment is very important, what kind of people we associate with, what kind of books we read, because the environment is, for example, you know, somebody loves sports. Whom do they hang out with? Football players, you know, or they all get together and watch football. Alcoholics, whom do they hang out with? In the bar. So similarly, for a spiritual seeker, it is very important to have the right environment, right context, you know, right kind of books, right kind of internet sites we visit, you know, what we look in our computer, what, you know, all that. Talking about books, there were these four men who were in a bar, and they were talking about the kind of books their wives read. So one said, you know, it's a strange coincidence. My wife read A Tale of Two Cities, and when she got pregnant, she had twins. You know, so, oh yeah. And another one says, yeah, it's so funny. My wife read Three Musketeers, and when she got pregnant, she had triplets. So another one says, you know, it's even stranger. My wife read Five People You Meet in Heaven. You know, there's a famous book, Five People You Meet in Heaven. And when she got pregnant, she had quintuplets. She had five at the same time. So the fourth man started running. So they said, where are you going? He said, My wife is reading Alibaba and the 40 Thieves. So the kind of books we read has a great impact on us. So no, books means everything, what we listen on the internet, what kind of audio tapes we buy, CDs we listen to, what kind of songs, you know, what we put on in our car as we are driving. People listen to this talk radio and, you know, there's so much negativity. It's better to listen to some soft hymns in your car or some spiritual songs or bhajans. And contact with wise people, saintly people is very, very important. At least for me personally, whatever little I have known, it's because of contact with Gurudev, of course, through his books. And also as a teenager, I listened to him quite a lot. And even in the late 80s, I had the opportunity to listen to him. And then people like Eckhart Tolle, I had was able to spend quite a bit of time with him. And then all the saints who come. Yes, I attended a whole week retreat where there were very few people and we had very close one-on-one, very close contact with him. He has stopped doing those now. He doesn't do them anymore. This was in the early 2000s. That was many years
ago. They have some, but they're very expensive.
They're very expensive and he very limits it because he felt that too much contact with people was bringing him.
Yeah,
because it's a constant. So, but I was blessed. I was able to spend a whole week with him in upstate New York in a very rural, like all wooded forest area. They had a retreat site. So we spent a whole week. But all these, and then also the Swamis who come here, you know, the saints who come here, Ishwarananda and Vimalji. Vimalji is coming here on February 28th to March 3rd. And he's going to be talking on Prashnopanishad, which is a very beautiful text, which is very practical. How to, starts with the worldly questions, and then the Prashna means question. So six teachers ask six questions, and how a seeker from the lowest can go to the highest. So contact with saints, with wise people. But then the mind runs out, and how do we stop it? You know, so in the Gita, it says very beautifully, just as a turtle, if you have seen a turtle, he has this hard shell and then he has these four limbs and the head which are sticking out. The moment he senses any danger, he pulls his limbs inside, he pulls his head inside and he's safe because the shell is so hard, nobody can, you know, hurt him. So similarly, a wise person, when he or she sees some object which are fascinating, and which are taking me away and which are creating more desires, so you withdraw. I'm not going to indulge in this. I'm not going to buy this or I'm not going to get it. And whatever it could be alcohol, could be objects, could be drugs, could be whatever a desire strong I have. But then the Gita also says that you may not, I'm not going to drink, or I'm not going to go to the mall, I'm not going to buy it. But inside the desire is still there. How do I get inside? I still feel like it. So that will only go when the mind comes in contact with the self, with the Lord. The desire will remain, what the Lord calls, the teacher calls in the Gita, the taste, rasa varjam. The rasa will remain, but the desire, you first control it by not indulging in it. But how do you remove the desire from the mind? By contacting the self, going inward in meditation. So self-knowledge is very, very important. Who I am and seeing the Lord's presence within and connecting with the Lord. That's what we do in our meditation. We turn the mind inward and connect with the divinity within. So the more you stay in contact with the Lord, the more your mind becomes pure. So from an impure mind, you make it a pure mind. From a lower mind that is involved in the world, you make it a higher mind that is involved in the Lord. And constantly throughout the day, turn your attention inward. And you can do that by either chanting a mantra or having a picture of whatever your favorite form of the Lord is in your car, on your phone, on the wallpaper. I've said that before. Have it maybe a little picture in the kitchen or, you know, wherever you spend a lot of time. But what we find is that even though the Lord is within, I'm not able to experience, not able to see the Lord. And it's as if the mind is covering the Lord. Now, how can the mind cover the Lord, even though the Lord is everywhere, but my mind is so strong that I just can't, you know, find that Lord? So the example they give is like the cloud and the sun. Now, the sun is millions of miles away, 93 million miles away, and it is illumining the entire universe, all the planets up to Pluto, everywhere, Saturn and all. But when on Earth, we say, oh, the cloud has covered the sun. The cloud cannot cover the sun. The sun is millions of miles away, but the cloud has obscured our vision. So I can't see the sun because the cloud has obscured my vision. Cloud has not covered the sun. Sun is far away. Sun is illumining the entire universe. And who creates the cloud? The sun does. It is the sun which evaporates the water and creates the clouds. So similarly, the Lord within appears to be covered by my mind, by my thoughts. So turn your attention from the cloud. Even the fact that you are seeing the cloud is because of the sun. The sun was not there. If it was dark, I would not see the cloud. So similarly, my mind is functioning because of the Lord's presence. The mind itself is inert, but the mind is created by the Lord within. So how to transform this mind? And there is a very beautiful phrase called unlearn. See, from childhood, we have learned so many things. We have such strong beliefs. This is how it should be. This only is right. My path is right, or my way, or the highway, or my religion is only good, or my... And even in among religions, you know, Protestants and then Catholics and then evangelists, and same way in Hindus, we have Shiva devotees and Vishnu. And there is so much conflict because we have chained ourselves to our beliefs. And they need to be unlearned. What do we mean by unlearned? So they say that our beliefs should lead us to the Lord, should lead us to spirituality. It's like the staircase. You know, I use the stairs to climb from the first floor to the second floor. But suppose I nail my feet to the stairs, am I going to be able to progress? No. And that's what happens when we nail ourselves to our beliefs that this alone is right, then we stop growing, we stop learning. So they say when you come in contact with a wise person, make your mind empty. Do not go there. See, when we even go to ask somebody or listen to somebody or hear somebody, we have our preconceived ideas. And if this teacher's teaching matches what I already know, that's a good teacher. I like this one. And if the teacher says something that I don't believe in, I don't think that's practical. So first we have to unlearn and be ready to accept others. Be ready. Because if I have my understanding, my consciousness in the sense of understanding, not the total, but my understanding, and then I combine with another person's understanding, I have doubled it, right? But if I combine it with 1,000 people, I accept everybody's beliefs as valid, then 1,000 times I have increased my understanding. So accept others' opinions, accept others. Not that you should not have your own convictions, but do not be rigid that this alone is right. Acceptance and willingness to learn. As long as my mind is full of ideas, it's not going to learn. So when I go to a teacher, I make myself empty and then let the teacher put their knowledge within us. And then what happens is that as we grow in our spiritual learning, as the mind becomes closer and closer to the truth, it becomes a higher mind, it reaches a state of no mind. So they say, what do you mean no mind? No mind does not mean that this person becomes stupid and has no knowledge. But when they talk about a state of no mind, what they say is that we have two aspects to our mind. One is a functional mind and one is a judgmental mind. So what is the functional mind? It tells me, okay, I have to get up in the morning, take a shower, have my breakfast, get in my car, drive to work, do what I have to do, come home, have dinner, go to sleep. So that is a functional mind. There's nothing wrong with that. And we all need it. You know, you need to function in the world. The problem comes when the judgmental mind arises. Okay, this is good and this is bad. I like this. I don't like this. I like this person. I don't like this person. I want this. I do not want this. So when we start labeling things as good and bad, right and wrong, likes and dislikes, that is where the judgmental mind arises. And the wise person also sees the same objects as you and I do, but the wise person does not judge. For him or her, everything is the Lord. So there is no hatred, there is no putting anybody down, any negative qualities. Why? Because the Lord is, even in the good, he is there, even in the evil, he is there. The evil person is able to commit evil only because of the Lord's presence. And the good person is able to do good deeds. Of course, it is our tendencies, our thoughts, our emotions, which can be good or bad. And based on that, a person may do good or bad actions, but it is the Lord within. So a wise person does not judge, does not discriminate, but spontaneously loves all, because the Lord that is in me is the same Lord everywhere. So that oneness it comes. And that is how you slowly reduce the mind's likes and dislikes. And, you know, good and bad, the judgmental, everything is good. Everything is the Lord. And if bad things are happening, if I can fix it, I fix it. Otherwise, I say, you know, oh Lord, it is your world. Now we get all worried, you know, there was a shooting here and this there. If I can fix it, I fix it. Otherwise, you say, you know, it's something is beyond my control. You just pray for the people who are hurt and hope that, you know, this violence and these things end. That's all we can do. So the mind has to be stilled. And that's what we practice in our meditation. And what we do is, as we have done so many times, we relax the body from head to toe. And as you relax the body, the more the body gets relaxed, the more the mind becomes quieter. So that is the first step. And the second is breathing. And breathing is a very, very powerful technique to still the mind. Not only in meditation, but say in the middle of the day, I'm having a stressful day, a lot of problems. Just take a minute and sit aside in a corner, or if you have a 10-minute break, or in lunchtime, just sit for 5 or 10 minutes separately in the corner, close your eyes and take slow, deep breaths. And pay full attention not only to the breath coming in and out, but to the gap in between. When I breathe in, there is a gap. Breathe out, there is a gap. So pay attention to the gap, or also when there is some noise going on. Where is this sound coming from? Silence. So pay attention to the silence that is underneath the sound. Even when we chant the mantra, Om, you know, when we do the Om meditation, slowly you shift your attention from the chanting to the silence in between. And that silence is God. That silence is Brahman. The gap between the two breaths is the God, is the divinity. So as you pay attention to the Lord and as you pay attention to the silence, your mind becomes still. And a still mind can then meditate and connect with the Lord. But the problem comes when the mind is racing. It's running, running, running. And I just cannot stop it, especially when we sit for meditation, that's the first thing happens. So they say, become a witness. In Sanskrit, they call it sakshi. So just as a witness is watching what is happening, himself is not involved, but later on in the court, if the judge asks him, what did you see? He says, Your Honor, I was walking by and I saw this man, you know, pull out a gun and shoot the other person and run away. Now, he does not know either of the two men, but he is independent, is not involved, but happens to watch it, and then he can be a reliable witness. On the other hand, if he's a brother-in-law of the person who was shot, or the person who shot, who the killer, then his evidence will be tainted, you know, his witness. So witness is uninvolved. So similarly, when I watch my thoughts, I become uninvolved. I just watch the thoughts, and the more the mind is racing, the more I become a witness, and that is the best way to still the mind, to by watching the mind. Because they say a watched mind becomes quiet. So if the mind is racing, if even after doing relaxing and breathing, it's not becoming quiet, become a witness. And how, what do you meditate on? You meditate on the Lord. And there's a very beautiful story. We have 5 minutes, so I'll do that. So there was this young man who wanted to reach God, who wanted to know God. So he asked his mother, "What should I do?" So his mother said, go and live in solitude in the forest." So he said, okay. Mother was a very wise lady. So he went, stayed for many months, stayed for years, and his mind was slowly getting quieter, but still he hadn't found God. And mother, I have lived in solitude so many years. I have been thinking. I still haven't found God. She says, okay, now you're ready to find a teacher. Go find a teacher. So he goes and finally comes to an ashram, a mission, and he finds out that there is this wise teacher. So he bows down to him and says, "I would like to learn how to meditate." And there were a large number of students. The teacher had about 30 or 40 students, and each one had a little room, small room to themselves, you know, very tiny room, just with a cot and that's it, and a chair. And so the teacher would instruct them and then tell them, "Go and meditate." Now this boy said, "What should I meditate on?" He asked the teacher, you know, privately. So teacher says, "What is it that you like the most?" He says, "I miss my cow, you know, in my village, in my house. The cow, I just loved her, and she was so nice, and she gave us milk." And teacher says, "Okay, meditate on the cow. You love the cow? Meditate on the cow." He said, "Okay." So the students every morning would be given directions to go and meditate, and they would meditate for half an hour, 1 hour, then they would come for breakfast. And this boy would sometimes not come for 2 hours, 3 hours, would skip breakfast, come for lunch. And they said, what's happening to him? He just stays in his hut. He never comes out. One day he didn't come out all day. In the morning he got the instructions, the breakfast passed, lunch passed, dinner was over, and still the young man is not there. So teacher says, "What happened to him? Is he okay?" They said, "We don't know. He just stays in his hut. He doesn't leave." So teacher says, "Okay, let's go and find out." So the door was closed. So the teacher gently opens, and he's in deep meditation. So teacher says, you know, calls him by name, "Come out." And he answers with a mooing sound, like that. You know, he doesn't reply. So teacher says, "Come out of the hut." He says, "No, my horns are too big. I can't come out of the hut." So in his meditation, he had become one with the cow. And teacher said, "That is meditation." So when you meditate on the Lord, what happens is our mind runs everywhere except on the Lord. So the mind has to become still and has to become one with God. And then only your meditation is complete. And God is not only outside in the form, but he is truly formless. The Lord takes different forms. He takes the form of Jesus, or the form of Buddha, or Guru Nanak, or Krishna, or Ram, or Shiva. These are all manifestations of that one formless entity. So from the form, you have to go to the formless. Don't get stuck on the form, because then you're limiting. It's like you're nailing your feet to the stairs. You're limiting. So the Lord that I see in the form, yes, I become one with it, but then ultimately he's everywhere. Everything is that. So then you do not limit the Lord in a particular form or a particular building. Or, of course, you know, if I'm a Christian or I'm a Sikh or I'm a Hindu, I have my beliefs, but we should not limit the Lord to that. Be willing to accept ideas from all, and then alone the growth happens. So from the limited, I become the vast. I become infinite. Why? Because God and me are one, and in that process I become infinite. Does not mean I become God, but I see everything as God. God alone is the God, is in the chair, he's in the mic, he's in me, in the book, in her, in him, everywhere, in all plants, birds, animals, fish, you know, the sun, the moon, the stars, everything is that. So from limited, you become vast. So that's how we can transform our thinking from the lower mind to the higher mind. And ultimately reach a state of no mind, where the mind is completely still. And that's what happens in meditation. If your mind becomes completely still, then nothing is there except, you know, the silence and that. And so when that happens, then that's very beautiful. That's why I like this group energy, because in the group, it is much easier to quieten the mind. I find that. And then that same practice should be done at home regularly every morning. It's a very, very beautiful chapter. I really enjoyed it. Anybody has any questions or comments?
Emptying mind means it's like an open mind.
Yes. Willing to accept what the teacher is telling. If I already have too many thoughts and too many ideas, then I'm not ready to accept what the teacher says. They say empty your mind so the teacher can put knowledge in it. If I already say, I already know it, then there is no point. Same thing when you're reading a book. I have to read it with an open mind. And that's why the scriptures have to become part of me. And this knowledge has to become my knowledge. Right now, it's the knowledge of the teacher in the book. But the knowledge has to become my knowledge. I have to become the knowledge. And that is called emptying the mind and then making it available. Yes.
Action in action.
Right, inaction. Action in inaction, right. Yeah, going from activity to stillness. Yes, yeah. The third chapter is how to work unselfishly.
Yeah.
The fourth is how to, they say doing less, you accomplish more. And doing nothing, you accomplish everything. So reaching that state of
desirelessness,
actionlessness. And also fourth chapter talks how to work in conjunction with others and work together for the benefit of mankind. And how every activity can become a service of the Lord. Even reading, even eating, even cooking, everything can become a service of the Lord. Whatever job I am doing, driving, walking, talking, everything can become. Because the Lord is there. Yeah. Thank you. That's good. No, the Gita has everything. The path of service, the path of love, the path of knowledge, the path of meditation, how to evolve the mind higher, who God is, what is the world, how was the world created, what is God's connection, talks about rebirth, reincarnation, everything is there in the 700 verses, the entire knowledge of
everything
is there. Yes. Right, right. So the body, the mind and the intellect, these are my three equipments. The body is the physical body that we see. And with the body, I perceive the objects. That means I see, hear, smell, taste, touch the objects. With the mind, I feel the emotions, joy, sorrow, anger, greed, jealousy. And with the intellect, I think the thoughts, you know, like science or geography, or I'm a conservative or I'm a liberal or whatever, those ideas. So science, all these ideas. So the art and all is in the mind. Art, poetry, drama, but science, history, you know, all those things are in the intellect. And vasanas are my desires, my tendencies that I was born with and which I strengthen in this life. I can have good desires or bad desires, good tendencies or bad tendencies. So the vasanas are the tendencies. And Om is the Lord's presence within us. Om is the consciousness. Actually, I have also talked in my meditation talk, what, why, when, where, how. If you don't have it, I'll send it to you again. So there I have introduced the subject of, and there again I have covered this particular, yes.
That chart up there with the BMI, is consciousness anywhere in that chart?
Om, that on the top, that orange.
The big sun?
Big sun, the Om, That represents, Om is the, that's why we chant Om, because Om is God, one of God's names. You know, God has thousands of names. But Om, just as if I say John, then you say what? So same way, when you say Om, then God says what? You know, you're calling me. So Om represents the life principle within me as consciousness. That is consciousness within, and it's the same consciousness everywhere. And that is the illumining factor, just as the sun illumines the whole universe. So similarly, this consciousness, I mean, sun illumines the solar system. So this consciousness illumines the not only this universe, but all the universes, and even the heavens and the hells, everything are illumined by that consciousness. And it's even beyond all this. It's beyond time, but it is there everywhere. But in the table, it functions as existence. In you and me, it functions as existence, knowledge, and bliss. Three things. So consciousness is the life principle, which because of which I am speaking and because of which you are at this point listening. And that's because of which the trees are growing and the birds are chirping and the sun is rising and the moon is moving. Everything is.
Is Om the source of consciousness?
No, Om is the sound symbol of consciousness. Consciousness cannot be described, but Om is the sound symbol which symbolizes the consciousness. Just as when you see Jesus in the church, that's not Jesus, but that statue of Jesus on the cross reminds me of Jesus' sacrifice. And same way, when I see Krishna or Ram or when I see Guru Nanak, it reminds me of that one infinite Lord. So Om is a reminder. It's a symbol. It represents that total. Just as when I see a cross, I immediately remember, you know, the Almighty Jesus, who is the power in the whole universe, like that. So Om is a symbol. It's a sound symbol. So by chanting Om, you are calling the Lord. And he immediately says, okay, yeah, did you call me? You know, like that. I mean, God, of course, is there. But that's just a way of reminding us that we are talking about God.
Invoking
Him. Yes, exactly. That's the right word. May the Lord manifest in my heart. Does that answer your
question? Yes, God. It did, certainly. It's a labyrinth. You know,
right.
Is God consciousness? Or
yes,
God?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. That in our Vedas, we call it as Brahman. Brahman means the big. So the biggest, that which is beyond everything and within everything, that
yes,
is.
Yeah.
Inside and outside. So God is not only in me, but is in and out, everywhere. And that Brahman is called consciousness. These are all different names. Consciousness, God, Brahman, these are all different names of that one. Father in heaven, what Jesus called as Father in heaven, it's the same thing.
Even though they never mention God, but I was reading a book, not the Zen, but the Mahayana Buddhist,
mm-hmm.
They call it perfect wisdom.
Yes.
It's the same thing.
Right.
It really is. They talk about
right.
It is.
Perfect wisdom or nirvana.
It's the only thing that exists.
Right,
so
right.
You're like, okay.
True. Yeah. Also in Buddhism. I'm sorry?
The only permanent thing.
Right. The permanent, that is the support
and,
of everything.
You know, and it's just...
They also call it nirvana. Nirvana means there is no fire. When there is no vasanas, no desires, then there is no fire of desire, because the desire is like a fire which consumes us. I have to get it. So nirvana means there is no fire. When there is stillness, that is the same thing. That is also consciousness. That is also whatever, you know, you were calling perfect wisdom. So they are all names of the same thing. Stillness, total peace. All that. We'll breathe for a few seconds and then we'll put off the lights. So put your hands above your eyebrows, and the two fingers, and the thumb controls the right nostril and the ring finger controls the left nostril. So let the close the right nostril with the thumb and breathe in and out through the left nostril. Slow, deep breaths. Pay attention to the gap in between the breath and in between inspiration and expiration, 5 or 7 times. Now close the left nostril and breathe in and out through the right nostril 5 or 7 times. Slow, deep breaths. At home, you can do 11 on each side at least. That's good to do before you start meditation. Now alternate in through the right, out through the left. In through the left, out through the right. So alternate and do that about 5 to 7 times. And put the lights off. Just the lower two squares, the middle and the left. Continue to breathe. Slow, deep breaths. Consciously relax your body from head to toe. Eyes closed, back is erect but not stiff. Relax each part of the body from head to toe and from toes back to the head. Consciously relax. Continue to breathe slowly and pay full attention to the breath and the gap in between. Slow, deep breaths. Turn your attention to the mind. If the mind wanders, be a witness. Let the mind's attention from the world be turned inwards to the Lord's presence within. The closer I come to the Lord within, the purer my mind gets. Ultimately, the mind becomes still and we reach a state of no mind, Let us practice that for a few minutes.